Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, for this hour, we have with us Marshall Thomas, who has written a book, I believe it's called Monarch. He's put together a DVD, which I saw in the preliminary form, beautifully done, tremendous amount of information in it, about the mind control programs that are being used by the Russians and primarily by our own government, vehicles by which the ability of people to think and control their own thoughts have been systematically eroded and destroyed. And now, where did you get all that information, Marshall? You've certainly accumulated, you know, really, you must have gone through thousands of pages of testimony.
Well, first I want to say thank you, Dr. Stan, for allowing me to be with you this evening and to talk about my book and my movie, Monarch, The New Phoenix Program.
Right.
My research is over the past 2 years. Essentially, I read approximately 50 books. I noticed some of them you actually sell on your website, Colin Ross's Bluebird, among others. And I've also traveled the country for the past 2 years and spoke with approximately 200 individuals that were targets of the ongoing non-lethal weapons mind control program that's currently being directed against American citizens who are primarily political dissidents or potential security threats. Now, essentially, the thesis behind this book and the story of these 200 people that I've spoken with is that they are being used as human experimental subjects in the development programs for non-lethal weapons. And specifically, they refer to electronic harassment. There's been hundreds, if not thousands, of websites of these individuals popping up on the Internet. And I felt as a epidemiologist and a research microbiologist that it was my duty as an American citizen to investigate this. And so over the past 2 years of my intensive research, the movie The Monarch, the New Phoenix Program, and the book by the same name is the product of that research.
Well, now tell me about this electronic harassment. I've heard of this, but what have you learned about it?
Well, essentially this is an outgrowth of the program MKUltra. And it's as well as it's a continuation of a long history of human experimentation by our government in weapons development programs, beginning perhaps with eugenics, as well as the Manhattan Project, nuclear weapons testing, the plutonium experiments that were radiation exposure to American citizens who were uninformed in hospital settings. And this outgrowth of using human experimental subjects as well as targeting American dissidents through programs such as COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, this is essentially a non-lethal weapons development program that has been melded into MKUltra mind control. And it works much like the Phoenix program did in Vietnam.
All right, fine. Well, when we get back, I think maybe we'll have to start in at square one. Tell
sure.
Our listeners about Phoenix. Most of them have never heard of it. And yet, of course, it was the most horrible, disgraceful thing. You think what's happening over in Arabia is bad? Wait to hear about Phoenix.
Yes, the Vietnam War essentially was a formative experience for some of the personalities that are engaged in the ongoing war crimes that I'm speaking of now, these experimental programs with non-lethal weapons.
Yeah, and of course, I think people must understand that the Vietnam War was really run by the CIA. It was not run by our military. Our military had all sorts of restrictions put on what they could do. But the CIA was over there operating under its own command and doing some of the most grotesque things. Among them was something called Operation Phoenix. So you pick up the story of Operation Phoenix.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. The Phoenix program was essentially our answer to the failure of the Strategic Hamlet program. We said we wanted to win the hearts and minds of the population and separate them from the communists. When this failed, they threw all their weight behind the Phoenix program, which was essentially an assassination campaign against civilians. Anyone who was a suspected sympathizer was informed on by a network of 30,000-plus informants. And this operation was run by approximately 50 CIA officers and about 500 military intelligence officers. It was led by Colby, Shackley, Helms, Casey, Abrams, Singlab, and also participating were the current war criminals, Colonel John B. Alexander and NSA General Michael Aquino.
I did not realize that Michael Aquino ever got to be a general. Is he still in the military?
General Michael Aquino is one of the highest-ranking intelligence officers in the United States.
Is he still in active duty?
Yes, sir, he is.
I don't think I got rid of him after the pedophile charges.
They kept him under wraps, but he is one of the three most powerful men in the National Security Agency.
That is fascinating. We'll get back to Michael Aquino later. But, of course, he had his own satanic church, the Temple of Seth. They break off of Anton LaVey's Church of Satan. So that is really quite a revelation as far as I'm concerned. And the fact that the military would keep him in a position of power says not only a great deal about the power of this man, Colonel Aquino, but, of course, about the real people who are running the United States military today. Because, of course, Colonel Aquino, pardon me, General Aquino now, was he a brigadier general, major general? What is he, do we know?
I'm not sure about his exact rank. I expect that he's at least a two-star general.
All right, well, we'll be back here in just a moment with Marshall. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Marshall Thomas was talking about Operation Phoenix. And, of course, one of the people who was running this was a man named, that time would have been Colonel Aquino, who today is General Aquino, one of the most high-ranking people in the NSA. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir. At the time, General Aquino was a 22-year-old military intelligence officer. Now, Ted Shackley of the CIA essentially ran Phoenix in Vietnam, and this resulted, it was overseen by Richard Helms out of the White House, and it was run out of the White House. The CIA and LBJ collaborated on Phoenix program. Colby admitted to the death of approximately 20 to 40,000 civilians due to the Operation Phoenix. Now, Phoenix, according to the CIA, was a fantastic success.
Basically, it was an assassination program on helpless and, in many instances, innocent civilians in South Vietnam were accused of being enemies or opposing America's involvement or American troops present in their country. And so what did they do? They just tortured and killed them. I know other people who were involved in that. Other military officers who were there who really thought it was a good program because, of course, they thought we were going after the enemy until they found out that many of the people who were killed weren't the enemy at all.
That's correct. A lot of these people were, in fact, tortured and forced into the resistance forces to kill our soldiers when otherwise they would have stood by and been at least neutral. Now, this was the formative experience of many of these personalities in the CIA currently and currently in military intelligence that are involved in their own domestic Phoenix operation here in the United States using extremely low-frequency ELF technology, which kills targets using ionizing and non-ionizing radiation.
And do you think that these are actually being utilized here in America, or is this being used in a form of harassment? Can it actually kill people?
Well, yes, it can. Essentially, most of these targets are neutralized, which means they're being tortured electronically with invisible bullets. It's perfectly deniable. The death rate of these targets is approximately 5% a year. So I would say one out of every 20 targets is killed. Essentially, these people have been turned into human lab rats, human guinea pigs, for the development of non-lethal weapons.
No, but of course, how do they decide who they're going to utilize? And are these people who are dissidents, or are these just people that they've selected to experiment on, as they did with the victims of Dr. Ewan Cameron?
Well, looking at this from an epidemiological point of view, being a microbiologist, I've broken it down into risk factors. And an extreme risk factor, for instance, would be a person who is a whistleblower, someone who takes on a very powerful government or government-associated entity. Also, people who are political activists, people who are in some kind of progressive movement within society that want to change society for the better. This essentially is an evolution of hard right political views that sees any progressive movement within society or any challenge to powerful corporations or government entities or their associates as potential targets.
All right, fine. Well, then how do they transmit these EMS frequencies at individual people? You have to have some means of actually getting to them. So how do they do that? Do they do it from an adjacent house? Do they do it from a satellite? How do they actually target them?
Well, that's correct. The ELF waves, or ELF technology, extremely low frequency, is used as a pulse microwave weapon. These systems are anywhere from a handheld unit that might look like a circuit board that could be concealed in something that might look like a cell phone, all the way up into satellite-borne systems. Generally, what happens to these targets is they are targeted in their homes, in their workplaces, and in public. This is used in tandem with active gang stalking. Generally, the people that do the active gang stalking and targeting of these individuals, the whistleblowers and political dissidents, the people that are used to target them do not have direct connections to the intelligence agencies or to the military. These people are generally members of cults, members of extreme political organizations, or low-level informants, people that might have been released from prison to be used by the government to target political dissidents.
Well, how can you be actually sure this is going on? Has anybody actually come to you and said, I was involved? I've had people tell me that they were being attacked electronically, but I didn't know whether to believe them or not. Certainly, because sometimes they sound a little odd, but then I suppose if this sort of thing were going on, anybody would sound odd. But how do we know what's really happening? Has anybody actually ever come forward and revealed this?
Anyone who comes forward and tries to help a person that's targeted, or anyone who is actively targeting them and then tries to go public, is usually targeted themselves. That means that they're made an example of. And the ability of the government to destroy the life of anyone who tries to out this program has been demonstrated over and over again, to the point to where the people involved are afraid for their lives, in fact. And so what you have is a group of people who are controlled by fear as well as money. They know what people want. People want, these people are given access to sex, drugs, money, and they're also threatened with, they may be forced back into prison, or they may be essentially become targets themselves or be killed. So very few of these people will come forward. Now,
has anybody ever come forward, to your knowledge?
I have not talked to anybody that's come forward.
All right. Now, what about the people who have been targeted? Have they contacted you?
Yes. I have traveled the country for the past 2 years, and I've talked to approximately 200 of these targets. Now, as you can imagine, if you're being tortured electronically 24 hours a day, and this goes on for years, a lot of these people have post-traumatic stress disorder. They also have induced psychoses. Now, in the United States, there may be as much as 1 to 2% of the population that suffers from schizophrenia. Now, within this population, there may be several thousand people that are actually targets of electronic harassment. So this is perfectly deniable, because these people who are complaining of being physically burned, shocked, or other means of torture, when they come forward to the legal community, to the legislators, or to the medical community, can be easily discredited as being schizophrenic, psychotic, or otherwise unbalanced. And after years of torture, many of these people have actually developed a psychological state that is, in fact, very similar to bipolar or post-traumatic stress. These people have induced illness, both physical and emotional, due to these sustained attacks, that's exactly what this is designed to do. It is designed to both neutralize you and over time slowly kill you.
Well, now, one of the things that you mentioned, that Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden, who many of us remember many years ago, was talking about the chemtrails and certainly the spraying that was going on, and it certainly apparently had worked with intelligence. Is he still involved in this, or is he retired?
I'm afraid he's still involved, sir. Now, one aspect of these non-lethal technologies, the extremely low-frequency technology, is that the intelligence community uses cover stories. The effective cover story of this psychological warfare operation they developed to cover their crimes has been the use of remote viewing. Now, remote viewing programs began approximately 30 years ago, Operation Grill Flame being one of these. These were run by Army Intelligence and by the CIA. They were publicly touted as ways to use psychic powers to spy on enemy forces and our implacable enemies. And in fact, this was used as a screen, as a psyop, to cover up the development of these psychotronic weapons that affect the central nervous system.
Well, of course, now, remote viewing is something you do when you're actually trying to tap into the occult.
Yes, sir.
And so are they using occult techniques for some of this psychological warfare?
The occult, the UFO, and the remote viewing are, in fact, cover stories. The cults have been developed as a means. For instance, you mentioned General Aquino's formation of the Church of Set. Now, for the past 40 years, the CIA and military intelligence have both started and infiltrated cults, cause-oriented groups, and even mainstream religions. Now, this infiltration program is designed to control large numbers of people. These cults or organizations function as essentially closed systems. These closed systems allow the inculcation of beliefs and otherwise a change in these people's realities that allow them to be differentiated and controlled in large numbers. I would cite specifically the Jonestown event as one example.
And you really believe that was a CIA operation just to test how gullible people could be?
That's correct, sir. Essentially, Jim Jones was a man with CIA connections.
We've heard that through the years.
Now, the land that this, in Guyana, that this...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Marshall Thomas. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Marshall Thomas, and of course we're talking about his book, Modoc, his DVD, Modoc. And basically...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Down in Guyana was basically a CIA mind control operation, but we can't let the American people understand really the degree of evil of this organization, because there's parts of the CIA that do very good work and very loyal to America, but everything is compartmentalized, and unfortunately they ran Operation Phoenix that killed somewhere between probably 40 and 60 million innocent civilians in Vietnam, and I suspect similar things are going on over in Iraq today, aimed, of course, at keeping this civil war going. But go ahead and pick up the story there. What about David Koresh's writing suggestion that a Koresh or any of the other doomsday cults recently, I think there was one cult led by a man named Applewhite, where all the people committed suicide so they could get onto the tail of the comet?
That's correct, sir. All of these doomsday cults are in fact fronts. They have no direct connection to the CIA or military intelligence, so they are perfectly deniable. If the MKUltra mind control operation is about to be outed or go public, then as a doomsday cult, it is very simple to explain the death of the entire group of people, which thus perfectly covers their tracks. Now, to understand the inception of the current New Phoenix program using non-lethal weapons, it's important to understand MKUltra, which began approximately 60 years ago.
All right, but I wanted to give the background of that, and tie, is that going to be tied into Operation Paperclip?
That's correct, Dr. Stan.
Go right ahead, then.
All right, Operation Paperclip recruited approximately 9,000 Nazi scientists and technicians in an effort to help the U.S. destroy the USSR. In 1953, Dr. Richard Helms chose Sidney Gottlieb to run the technical services staff to develop poisons to assassinate political opponents, truth serum drugs to use on spies, and mind control techniques to create robot assassins or unwitting double agents. Now, Dr. Gottlieb used some of these Nazi scientists who had perfected mind control techniques using victims of the Holocaust, one of which was Dr. L. Wilson Green. Dr. Green was brought to the United States, and he and others taught, in effect, the U.S. Navy, Air Force, Army, and CIA and others how to copy their methodologies to break and thus control the human mind. Now, this works best, according to MKUltra documents, when the subject is very young. According to MKUltra documents and sources, mind control works best when the subject victim is 3 years of age or younger. Severe trauma applied to the human mind forces the mind to split or disassociate in an effort to shield itself from trauma too horrible to imagine. This methodology was codified and consists of essentially what is satanic ritual abuse. They are identical. What was going on in the laboratory and now, which is what is going on in our community, satanic ritual abuse, is in fact MKUltra mind control programming. A child is raped or forced to engage in satanic ritual abuse of animals and other human beings, including torture and murder.
Well, you know, Marshall, as you tell this, I would say that's the most ridiculous thing in the world, except one of our friends was a victim of that, and she corroborates everything you said, starting about age 3, which is exactly what you're saying. And it took many years before, she could, of course, overcome this dissociative personality that had been implanted in her through this terrible torture. People find it so difficult to believe that anything could be that evil. Unfortunately, it is.
That's correct, Dr. Stan. Now, the use of multiple personality disorder to use human beings for the intelligence agencies, essentially a trauma of this magnitude at such a young age causes the human mind to split and dissociate, much like you would create a partition in the hard drive in your computer. Now, a hypnosis is used on this person to create an alter or second personality. When this person, for the rest of their life, is hypnotized, then that person will be used for operations and will have only a sense of the loss of missing time. They will have no memory of being used for sexual blackmail, assassination, drug courier, or other military intelligence operations.
You hold that thought, of course. That's really also the story of Kathy O'Brien, and we have, of course, several interviews with her as well as her book. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this evening is Marshall Thomas. We're covering an awful lot of things, so we're just going to, I think, stay with this for a while. We're talking about this idea of creating dissociative personalities. Of course, they call it multiple personalities. It is not simply by accident that many of these people would actually form organizations. Some of them brought lawsuits against the people who had actually carried out these atrocities. And then suddenly there is an organization formed all across America with seemingly limitless funds. It's called the False Memory Syndrome Organization. The False Memory Syndrome Organization is to convince you that all of these stories are false memories, that none of it's real, it's all made up. And of course, who is it who organizes the False Memory Organization, the Syndrome Organization? Why, members of the CIA. People like Dr. Charlie West. And was Sidney Gottlieb in that?
No, Dr. Stan. Sidney Gottlieb had retired. Apparently, during the 1970s, when this broke in Congress about the laboratory experiments of MKUltra, it appeared that the CIA was going to have Dr. Gottlieb take the fall, so to speak, for these crimes. Dr. Gottlieb had no intention to do so, but before he could spill the beans, he died of a heart attack.
That was very, very convenient.
That's correct. Now, as you mentioned, the False Memory Syndrome Foundation has original board members such as Dr. Martin T. Orne. Dr. Martin T. Orne was an MKUltra CIA contractor. He was from the University of Pennsylvania's psychology department. He was an expert in mind control and breaking the minds of children in order to control them for the rest of their lives. Someone who was in Dr. Orne's power as a child and had their mind disassociated might be hypnotized later in life and used in operations and only have the sensation of lost time, but otherwise no memory of having been used in prostitution, drug courier, or assassination, or other military intelligence-type operations.
And because these things are so difficult for people to believe, could this go on in America? Remember, there was a television program. It was called The Pretender. It was a takeoff on this. Kathy O'Brien tells the same story, a first-hand experience, after having come out of it, and I unfortunately have heard it from many other people, including Dr. Colin Ross. We carry his book. Now it's called The CIA Doctors, and we'll be back here in just a moment with Marshall. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Marshall Thomas, and we're talking already about some of the things that are going on in our society today. And basically, a number of Nazi scientists, some of the most vicious and horrible people who committed terrible atrocities in the communist prison camps, were brought to America and given carte blanche into the minds of children here, some of them kidnapped, some of them bought from their parents, and that's what happened to Kathy O'Brien. She was actually bought by the CIA, who threatened to put her father in prison for because of his violating his children and other children. And he got off scot-free and eventually got some very comfortable jobs for selling his daughter, Kathy O'Brien, into sex slavery and, of course, into these CIA programs. And there have been others, certainly Dr. Colin Ross, in his book, The CIA Doctor, says confirm that. And as I was simply mentioning, we even had a television program about it. You probably watched it. It was called The Pretender. But, of course, they never told you the real truth, that this was not simply make-believe. This is what was really had happened in the United States. So you pick the story up there, Marshall.
Well, that's correct, Dr. Stan. It is very difficult for people to believe that our government would perpetrate such crimes. And in order to cover these up, they have created organizations such as the False Memory Syndrome Foundation that are staffed by MKUltra researcher psychiatrists as well as well-known pedophiles. For instance, a founding board member is Dr. Martin T. Orne. He is an MKUltra programmer, an expert in hypnosis, and world expert in how to break the human mind in order to control it. The founder of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation is Dr. Ralph Underwager. He and his wife openly advocate pedophilia, saying that it was, quote, God's will adults engage in sex with children. He told British reporters in 1994 that, quote, scientific evidence proves 60% of all women molested as children believed the experience was good for them. Dr. Underwager is the world's foremost authority on the false memory hoax. But in court, Dr. Underwager is repeatedly revealed as a charlatan. Numerous other people that are associated or members of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation have connections to pedophilia, covert operations, and black psychiatry, particularly Peter and Pamela Freid, the executive directors of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, who have been accused of sexual abuse by their daughter, a professional psychiatrist at the University of Oregon.
Now, did you ever run into Jocelyn West, who was a top CIA programmer and a psychiatrist, that apparently he was associated, at least I've been told, he was associated with the False Memory Syndrome Organization?
That's correct, Dr. Stan. Dr. West was most famous for his LSD experiments. Dr. West was an MKUltra, he was a colonel eventually, but he was also an MKUltra programmer. Dr. West was famous for giving a lethal overdose of LSD to an elephant named Tosco. Dr. West also ran LSD experiments during the 60s in the Haight-Ashbury. Dr. West was very active over the years in remote viewing, as well as these MKUltra mind control programs. So, in effect, Dr. West is a link between the cover-up as a member of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. He is linked to MKUltra through his use of joining cults and his use of LSD in experiments on human beings and children. And he is also linked to remote viewing as the medical officer for Project Grill Flame.
Now, if you want to talk, could you just briefly mention what the remote viewing is for our listeners?
Remote viewing is essentially a psychological warfare operation, a cover story, to cover up the development of psychotronic or non-lethal weapons, weapons that can attack the central nervous system. Remote viewing, as it is touted, is supposed to be a way to use psychic powers to spy originally on Russian bases. In fact, this is a cover-up. Essentially what is referred to as a psychological warfare operation. These personalities that are involved in remote viewing also are involved with the corporation SciTech Corporation, which holds a patent for a microwave psychotronic weapon that is used to remotely influence the central nervous system of human beings.
Now, of course, you'd mentioned, isn't that the one that there's a major general who is on
Yes, Dr. Monteith. That's General Stubblebein.
General Stubblebein.
General Stubblebein was involved in remote viewing programs. He is also involved in cult operations. And he is, first and foremost, a military intelligence officer. The remote viewing program essentially is a way to make money off gullible people, but also to screen the development and to find people to experiment on using microwave weapons that affect the central nervous system.
Well, now, of course, there's some of this into frank occultism, because I was shown one time a spoon that the general had bent. And, of course, I couldn't even budge it, but it was made into not simply a circle, into a double circle. And of course, the only way you could do that would be to harness some of those supernatural forces that are out there. So was he into that sort of thing as well?
Yes, Dr. Stan. Essentially, these are this is fraudulent operations and lies to cover up what is something very real. Now, when you look closely at these remote viewing programs and look at some of these personalities, these people are tied to different threads of what is essentially an infiltration operation as well as a counterinsurgency. I would cite specifically Dr. Harold Puthoff, who exemplifies this contradiction. Dr. Puthoff is a former National Security Agency officer who developed the pulse microwave laser. He is also a participant in remote viewing programs, as well as a high-level Scientologist who likes to counsel traumatized victims of death cults and school shootings. In other words, these programs are all tied together: the development of non-lethal microwave weapons, remote viewing, the use of cults, including Scientology, and the use of traumatization of victims to produce MKUltra subjects out in the community.
Now, my understanding, Chris, you best not say anything about Scientology, because they'll bring a lawsuit against anybody who actually is critical of them or what they're doing, and they have unlimited funds, of course, to go after anybody they want to. So is there any actual proof that they in any way were involved with government?
Well, the man who started Scientology was, in fact, a naval officer.
And that's L. Ron Hubbard?
That's correct, sir. He was also a science fiction writer. Now, essentially, their use of the E-meter and other aspects of their operation are patently ridiculous. Besides being beyond belief, essentially, this cult acts as a stalking, operated in active gang stalking against some of these targets. These cults are closed systems. Now, when you convince a large group of people that are, in fact, that they are, their bodies, their human bodies, are made up of clusters of spirits called Thetans, and that essentially they were banished here to Earth by an evil galactic ruler named Xenu, you have essentially separated them from normal reality that you and I take for granted.
And is this a belief of the Scientologists?
That's correct. This is actually one of the central tenets of Scientology.
Well, certainly John Travolta is a Scientologist, Tom Cruise is a Scientologist, and you know, there have been a number of very prominent people who've been into Scientology. So obviously they seem to have a hold on some very, very good people.
That's correct. They treat, they specifically treat very high-profile people very differently than their normal recruits. They pamper these people, and they put a lot of energy into recruiting these high-profile personalities. Now, neither one of the gentlemen you mentioned has ever been to college. Essentially, they are gullible personalities who have been taken in. Now, to exemplify this, Dr. L. Ron Hubbard, before his death, was charged by the Internal Revenue Service for defrauding, essentially, his church. He stashed millions of dollars from dummy corporations into Swiss bank accounts. Now, he died before the government could bring a case, but his wife and high-level members of Scientology were prosecuted and convicted not only of defrauding the church of millions of dollars, but also of actively wiretapping, burglarizing, and otherwise intimidating multiple government agencies and investigators in an effort to thwart their investigation and prosecution for fraud.
But of course, what you're suggesting is that the Scientologists, although they may have gone after government, were actually working with some of these CIA or intelligence cults.
That's correct, Dr. Stan. The use of many of these different closed systems gives you a large pool of people that you are capable of manipulating for operations, be it against targeted people in the community, dissidents, whistleblowers, or potential security risks. Many of these people who are being slowly murdered with non-ionizing as well as ionizing radiation weapons are also being gang-stalked in the community by groups of people, for instance, using Scientology members to actively target people in the community.
What was the relationship between the Scientology and the Process Church of the Final Judgment?
The Process Church essentially was associated originally with Charles Manson in California when they got their start. The Process Church, or the Foundation, later moved to Utah. Now, they have been active in MKUltra experiments using satanic ritual abuse to produce multiple personality in children in order to break their minds and control them. High-level church members, specifically Dr. Glenn Pace of the Mormon Church, circulated a confidential inner church memo that said he had personally counseled approximately 60 young adults who came to him with help. These people were suffering from multiple personality disorder and other disabilities, and they gradually remembered with his help these recovered memories. Some of these memories were memories as children of seeing people hurt. Second level recovered memories were essentially seeing people killed and even babies tortured. Now,
that was very much like the McMartin school, the preschool.
That's correct, Dr. Stan. Now, Dr. Joseph Mengele perfected the use of mind control on victims of the Holocaust. He found that if he could get a concentration inmate to kill someone they loved, the shock of this broke their minds to the point where they could be easily controlled.
Now, have you ever talked to anybody who claimed that they saw Mengele in the United States?
No, sir, I haven't.
And I've actually talked to about three of them, and they said they got Colin Ross, said that he'd heard people tell the same story. Whether it's true or not, we do know that the CIA helped Mengele out of Germany and went to South America, but some people have claimed, whether true or not, that he was actually brought here to carry on his experiment. So go right ahead. Before we go on, I would like you to tell our listeners how they can get your book and your DVD, because it is we spent about 3 hours. How long is that DVD?
That DVD is approximately 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, we must have seen most of it then, because it went on and on and on, but fascinating, really. If it weren't for the fact that news was coming up, we would have seen the last part of it, but we must have watched at least 2 hours of it. So how can they get your DVD and your book?
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Presently, I'm selling it on lulu.com, that's lulu.com. Under books and video, if they type in Monarch, my website should pop up. Also, if you just go to Google and you type in Monarch, : the New Phoenix Program, the website should come up as well.
What will they get off the website?
Well, on the website, they can download an e-book, which is a couple of dollars, or they can purchase the book, the bound book, as well as the DVD movie, for approximately $15.
All right, fine. Well, there's a lot of great, fascinating footage there. Where did you get all of that footage?
Well, Dr. Stan, actually, I made that film on my laptop computer. that's initially a preliminary cut that I would like to, in fact, make a production movie, but essentially it tells the story as I want to tell it.
Well, how did you manage to get the time and, you know, the financing to accomplish what you have? 2 hours, 2 years out of your life of research and travel must have been a very expensive undertaking.
Well, Dr. Stan, I'm a very dedicated microbiologist. I've spent years of my life researching terrible diseases, in effect trying to stop one from breaking out. I'm an expert in hantavirus. I'm also an expert in molecular genetics of hantavirus and the bubonic plague, Yersinia pestis. I was in the process of developing a bacteriophage drug, essentially a novel means of stopping a potential outbreak of bubonic plague or a plague bioweapon that might be engineered in the future to be resistant to normal antibiotics. While I was engaged in this development, it came to my attention that human beings were being used against their will, used as human guinea pigs here in the United States, in order to develop microwave and non-lethal psychotronic weapons. I sold everything I own and borrowed money and threw myself into it completely, and in that 2 years, essentially, I've been able to create a book and a movie, and I hope to do more in the future.
Well, I congratulate you for what you've done. You've certainly done a great job and certainly accumulated a fantastic amount of research, much of what I'm acquainted with, but most people would not be. They haven't been out as long as I have. So you've got in 2 years what it's taken me well over 40 years to accumulate. Well, our guest this evening is Marshall Thomas. His book, Monica, you can get it at lulu.com. That's lulu.com. And then, of course, once again, your website, Marshall, before.
Yes. My website essentially is youtube.com/MarsBoy683. They can see the movie for free. That's youtube.com/MarsBoy, M-A-R-S-B-O-Y, 683. If they click on playlist...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Well, Marshall, go ahead. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, I've thrown myself completely into this project because I've become acquainted with the concept of the Trojan horse. Essentially, the development of these terrible weapons and the use of mind control is part of an elaborate Trojan horse operation run by General Michael Aquino and his associates using cults and other methodologies in order to infiltrate our government using blackmail and intimidation, as well as a counterinsurgency aimed at the people that might be able to stop them, whistleblowers, political dissidents, and potential security risks, or people that might have knowledge about what they're able to do.
Well, of course, aren't you a little afraid of Michael Aquino? He is has a history of suing people who have talked about him, and certainly we have simply have not checked the facts. But have you had any threats against your life for putting this information out?
Michael Aquino and his associates have killed literally thousands of people in their quest to use this Trojan horse operation to subvert the constitutional authority of the United States. They seek to subvert our government and to subvert other governments in the Western civilization in order to create essentially a giant fascist state, what other people refer to as the New World Order. I approach this as essentially believing that I may or probably very will be murdered for my efforts, but I sleep with a clear conscience, sir, because essentially I know I am on the side of right, and I know if I die in this battle that I will rest at the right hand of God.
Well said, and of course you're absolutely right. We are involved in a spiritual battle, certainly being waged on a political, ideological, cultural battlefield, but it is a spiritual battle, and the only protection any of us have is from our Lord. So, Marshall, thank you so very much for being with us. Again, our guest has been Marshall Thomas. His book, Monarch, you can get it up at lulu.com or simply type in Marshall Thomas on Google. You'll find his information fascinating, and the DVD, I really will have to admit, was riveting. It's certainly very, very professionally done. Tremendous footage, information you need to have to understand what is going on today, because so much of what's going on really doesn't make sense. Marshall, thank you so much, and good night.
Thank you, Dr. Monteith. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, some of what we've been talking about just sounds so incredible. How could this be true and every American not know? We carry the book, it used to be Operation Bluebird, now it's called The CIA Doctors by Colin Ross, and goes into the stories of many of the people who've been victims of CIA mind control programs. That's The CIA Doctors by Colin Ross. We actually have a 4-tape set, with one of those is actually including Colin Ross on mind control, and then of course we carry a CD, and you get that from us. It has, I think it's something like 80,000 pages there on this CD. of previously suppressed, or maybe it's only 18,000, of previously suppressed, formerly top secret CIA files, and now you can read them all there, and they're on this one CD. You just call and ask for the CIA papers, release papers CD. We actually have copies of the Church Committee report. We actually have a four-tape set on mind control. We have a, and of course you'll hear there, some of the interviews with Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. We actually have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove that has an hour interview with Kathy O'Brien, who was, of course, recruited into this whole incredible world of violence and seduction and certainly of terrible torture so that you could get a mind control slave. We have a four-tape set on Satanism and deliverance from another person who was a victim of satanic ritual abuse starting when she was 3 years of age and, of course, of her ultimate deliverance. Satanism and deliverance, a four-tape set. Information you're not going to get elsewhere, but you must understand the true nature of the evil that we are certainly opposing at the present time. If you'd like to get this information, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So give us a call. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. If you'd like, of course, to get one of our catalogs, you can get it simply by requesting it. If you'd like, of course, to get our catalogs on health foods or on emergency foods or information on the Berkey, water filters, the other things that you'd need for emergencies, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. How do you put this into any sort of perspective? Well, you need, of course, to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or watch the DVD. Then you need to watch the DVD of my talk of The Forbidden Secret, which will take you into an understanding of the other dimension, because there really is another dimension. We have, of course, a great new four-CD set going into The Secret, which is being used all across America by millions of people who've heard about this wonderful means by which you can control the world with your mind. I've been endorsed by Oprah Winfrey and by Larry King and by Jim Carrey and Jack Canfield. And it is basically put forward as a vehicle by which you can get anything you want to by simply learning how to manipulate the universe with your mind. Nobody really understands what they're doing. People are opening their minds to demonic spirits because we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Ladies and gentlemen, it really is there. It's not imaginary. Our four tape set, The Secret, Behind the Secret, the four tape or four CD set, 1-800-544-8927. We'll be back in just a moment here with the second hour of Radio Liberty. But please pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection, because you are our only protection against the dark side. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, today, or this evening, our guest is Dr. Peter Hammond from Frontline Ministries, operates out of Cape Town, South Africa, but of course travels all over Africa, spreading the word of the Lord and bringing hope and to the people there. And he started 25 years ago. He's got quite an organization going. And of course, he comes to the United States not infrequently. And of course, they need to have funds to keep getting the word out, and of course to be able to travel. And so we always enjoy having him on. And certainly one of my favorite guests. I hope he's one of yours as well. Good evening, Peter. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Praising God. Thank you.
All right. Fine. Well, how long are you going to be here in the country?
Another week. I'm still going to Nebraska and to Colorado Springs and then back to South Africa. I've been all over the states, from Florida and Virginia and Pennsylvania, down in Arizona as well, and now in California.
Well, how different our country is than Africa, where you are. Of course, we remember when South Africa was a peaceful area where, of course, it was safe to go out and walk at nighttime, and now, of course, it's becoming increasingly violent and chaotic, and that's one of the better areas in Africa to live. Certainly, what a tragedy has befallen that continent.
It really is, Dr. Stan. I mean, I grew up in paradise, really. Rhodesia back in the 1960s and 70s was like a paradise where we didn't have to worry about crime, where we didn't live with locks and keys, where plentiful wildlife was all over. And Rhodesia actually had one of the lowest crime rates and unemployment rates in the world, and it was decreasing. And it was a breadbasket. They were exporting food throughout the continent, and nobody starved in Rhodesia. I mean, that's just a fact. And now, today, what has happened as a result of State Department interference, British Foreign Office, World Council Churches, United Nations, the whole bunch went on a campaign to destroy the functioning pro-Western republics and democracies in Africa and turn them over to Marxist mass-murdering thugs who have been raping and destroying our continent. And it's an absolute tragedy. I've lived through several revolutions, and for the last 25 years been helping to assist the persecuted church in these countries, so we've seen a lot of the results. And it's absolutely stunning to me when I travel to America to find how most people are so uninformed and kept in the dark as to the reality of what's really going on in Africa as a result of the foreign policy of this country.
Well, of course, that is why we love to have you on, and we always look forward to your visits. Well, let's start out with South Africa. When we were there, it was stable. Yes, there was racial discrimination, but it was disappearing. We were beginning to integrate the neighborhoods. We were beginning to integrate the sports teams. And had the South Africa been left alone, why, they would have gone on to a multiracial community with, of course, a tremendous opportunity for black and white. What's the incidence of unemployment in South Africa today?
Oh, Dr. Stan, it's quite horrific. I think it's up to 40%. 40% in a country that used to have something like 5% unemployment. So plainly the economic sanctions and now a lot of socialist and affirmative action policies and crime out through the roof has conspired to really bring about a terrible situation where many of the black people are poorer today than they've ever been.
And, of course, this is really not designed to help the black at all. But, of course, it was aimed to destroy the white society there. And they've killed thousands of white farmers. And, of course, now what's the government doing? They want to disarm everybody so nobody will be able to defend themselves. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Peter Hammond, and of course we would point out that it was the American State Department that brought gentleman to power that that took over, that actually that preceded Mabiki, and of course they actually rigged those elections. They printed up 80 million ballots for 40 million voters, and they simply threw out entire boxes of ballots, and long before the ballots were all counted, why they announced that Nelson Mandela was the new president of South Africa. And suddenly what's happened is they've just destroyed the infrastructure of that society. Now, what's happening to industrial production? Because at one time you were doing a great deal of industrial production. Has industry returned at all?
Oh, it's been horribly affected because we have power failures now, something that we never had before. In fact, in Cape Town, I don't know how many people are aware that Cape Town, South Africa, has the only nuclear power station in the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. And we just about had a meltdown a year and a half ago as a result of affirmative action. The ANC government had very fraudulently gained control of our Cape Town municipality, fired all the qualified engineers because they were the wrong color, white, and they put in affirmative action employees who didn't do their job. And before we knew it, our reactors were heading for a total meltdown. This is the only nuclear power station in sub-Saharan Africa, and we had a total 100% a power blackout throughout the whole of Greater Cape Town. I mean, this is a city of 3 million people, no power. Tourists trapped in elevators for the whole day. A total gridlock at the traffic lights because there was just no electricity, and you can just imagine the productivity loss was in the billions of dollars lost in the week that we had this power failure. It was a catastrophe economically for tourism and so on, and they had to re-employ as consultants the very same white engineers that they had fired or laid off several years before, who then had to come back and have a zero placed at the end of their consultation fee in order to fix this mess. And we now have power failures all over the country. The country's reeling. I mean, this was one of the most well-run countries. You may recall that South Africa at one stage led the world in a lot of medical innovations, such as the first heart transplant was carried out in our city, Cape Town, in the Groote Hospital by Chris Barnard back in the 1960s. The first successful C-section where both the mother and daughter survived back in the 1840s, in fact, also in Groote and Cape Town.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Peter was just saying that at one time, everything in South Africa was quite prosperous. Medicine was excellent in many respects. Scientific advances in medicine were coming from South Africa. But all of this has changed as the infrastructure begins to crumble, as the intermittent electricity, and then, of course, so many of the well-trained physicians have simply picked up and left the country. What about the availability of medical supplies? Are they readily available there?
Many are, but, when governments want to interfere with racial quotas and with affirmative action, and they are trying, many people think racism has ended in South Africa, but in fact it's been brought back. There's probably worse racial animosity right now with the job reservations and the quotas and the forced affirmative action that's been pushed upon everyone. It's very aggressive. They're called black economic empowerment. But in the rest of the world, when they have affirmative action, it's to protect the minority. In South Africa, the affirmative action is on the part of the majority, and the minority, which in South Africa is the whites, are completely disadvantaged, so that, for example, if you're a white male, you've got next to no chance of getting a job at all. And it's forced a diaspora, where families have been fragmented and split up, and many families now have their young men overseas working in Canada, America, New Zealand, Australia, or England. There's 800,000 white South Africans just in Greater London, England. So our country has been torn apart by this new aggressive racism, which is so vitriolically anti-Christian and anti-white male in particular. It's not helping the economy, because instead of merit and people not being judged by the color of their skin but by the content of the character, what you now have is a rigid racism, and of course along with it, as you can imagine, a lot of corruption.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. And of course, now they want to disarm the people as a stepping stone towards, the dictatorship, the Marxist dictatorship, which would be brought about by the policies of the American State Department, which really doesn't make sense unless, of course, you read my newsletters, and then, of course, it will all make sense to you. Well, let's get then on into Sydney, into what's going on in Zimbabwe, which used to be known, of course, as Rhodesia, where you were raised. So my understanding is that they're up to, 3,000% a year inflation?
That's exactly what's going on. We're talking about over 3,000% inflation. I mean, if you wonder what that means, it means that a person isn't getting paid enough to cover their transportation to work. For example, school teachers are not even getting paid enough to pay for their transportation, their bus fares or train fares to work, so that they're really subsidizing going to work. And the government is setting arbitrary standards that the people who produce bread, the bakers, have to sell the bread for much less than it cost them to make it. It's just economic insanity. Everything around the country is economically insane.
Well, now, how can you continue baking bread if you lose money on every loaf? You can't make it up in volume, for sure.
Well, in fact, most of the bakers, of course, been closed down, and then the government brought in laws that you couldn't close down, and they think they can legislate prosperity, and of course you cannot. The socialists have tried for over a century now to create prosperity and equality and freedom and so on through legislation, and it just doesn't work. And yet, despite all the economic failures, the Zimbabwean government is determined to continue their insane socialist Marxist policies, and the country is so destroyed that now 40% of the population has fled, voted with their feet, left. You've got over 5 million Zimbabweans across the border in South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, Malawi, even Mozambique. Imagine Zimbabweans fleeing to Mozambique, but it's worse than Zimbabwe, and of course even to Britain and America and Australia. So the country's been fragmented, it's been imploded, and the people have fled. They're voting with their feet, just as people vote with their feet by fleeing countries like Cuba or in the past East Germany. You can tell where freedom is. People move to where there's freedom. People flee from where there's oppression. That's why when people say that America is such a horrible country, why is it that so many people of the world want to come to America? And if South Africa was so terrible, why do so many millions of blacks come in as illegal aliens into South Africa? And they did, especially in the old apartheid years. If apartheid was so evil, why was it that they fled freedom in Mozambique and Angola to flee to South Africa? And so that's what's happening in Zimbabwe. The people are fleeing, and the only way people survive in a country is from their relatives overseas being able to bring more money into them. So the country is not surviving internally. It's only surviving from external extraordinary efforts from relatives trying to keep the aging parents or some relatives alive by smuggling in what they can to keep them going.
Now, of course, you're really talking about a nation of about 12 million people, of which 5,000 have left, and so you're down to about 7 million people. So, and then, of course, what is the unemployment level in Zimbabwe at the present time? Do we have any idea?
Oh, the unemployment in Zimbabwe is officially 85%, but in fact it's got to be worse than 85%. That's 85% unemployment. It's beyond comprehension. But this is what happens when you have farm invasions like Zimbabwe, where they did something like what Stalin and Lenin did in Russia back in the 1920s and 30s, the dekulakization of the Ukraine, where they literally killed all the farmers, destroyed all the farms, and then there were literally millions dying of starvation because they just destroyed the breadbasket of the whole of Central Europe, the Ukraine, and Russia was starving. But as Lenin said, it's a small price to pay. A few million dead if the remaining millions are communist, and I think that's what Mugabe is trying to do. Robert Mugabe, the Marxist dictator, who Andrew Young and Jimmy Carter handed over power in Zimbabwe back in the late 1970s, that thug has for the last 28 years been pushing his people into the ground with a KGB-like CIO, the intelligence organization of the police state, and they blew up the only independent radio station with the police and army standing around laughing. They blew up the only independent daily newspaper with the police standing around laughing. They have tortured most of the opposition members of parliament. I mean, they have been tortured by the police. Imagine members of parliament being tortured by the police. But this happens. Even the head of the opposition party, which has a huge amount of the vote, he has been beaten senseless in the most vicious way at a recent prayer meeting. So the Zimbabwe government is so lawless, they can even threaten... the president went on TV and threatened the life of the Supreme Court justice because he found against their policies of land invasions and said that he must just resign or he will be killed. And that's the kind of lawlessness. They do not even respect the Supreme Court justices who have been attacked and beaten in their own chambers with the police standing around doing nothing to protect them. And when people have asked the police, aren't you to intervene? Isn't your job to protect innocent life? And they said, no, our job is to enforce the will of the government. Literally, that's what the police have been quoted as saying. Our job is not to protect the citizens. Our job is to enforce the will of the government.
And, of course, really, the great tragedy is this government was put in place by Henry Kissinger, yes, who promised the Rhodesian people that gave his word as of honor. Now, remember, Henry Kissinger is the chief advisor to President Bush. And if you don't believe that, you need to read Woodward's latest book. I think it's Under Siege, where, of course, this is, statement is made whenever Henry comes to Washington, D.C., why the president always drops what he's doing to visit with Henry. But Henry had promised the people of Rhodesia, given his word of honor, that if things ever got out of hand, that, of course, America would come to their aid.
Well, Dr. Stan, in fact, I remember that. I was... in Rhodesia at the time, and we had broadcast over and over from Henry Kissinger, the American Secretary of State, assuring us, saying, if you will accept the American peace plan, which was to hand over to the U.S. Authorities and the British in order to hand over to Mugabe's characters, he said, the United States government will guarantee your farms, private ownership of property, the rule of law, and we will guarantee that any Rhodesian who wants to move will be set up anywhere in the world, and it won't be necessary anywhere because we will guarantee that your private ownership, property, and a rule of law is guaranteed in Zimbabwe. And, of course, I don't know of one thing that's been done to honor those promises.
And so if Henry Kissinger would do that to Rhodesia or Zimbabwe, do you think that he would do anything to protect the American people when we face a similar situation? And, of course, that there was actually a moderate who was elected, a black man named Bishop Mesereo, and it didn't matter if it was a legitimate election. That was not the man Henry Kissinger wanted in place. And so what happened after that? How did they get rid of Bishop Mesereo? It was a legitimate election, wasn't it?
That's correct. Bishop Abel Mesereo was elected by majority votes in the first free and fair multiracial elections, one man, one vote, everyone got a vote, and so on. And then immediately the response was, at that stage, of course, that was now Jimmy Carter's watch with Andrew Young being Secretary of State at that stage. And they said, sorry, wrong result, you've got to have another election. And so within a few months, in the same year, 1979, that they had this election to bring Abel Mesereo to power, they had to go back to another elections. I think it was something ridiculous, like 8 or 9 months later. And they, this time, had absolute terrorism rampant, and this time Mugabe got the power, even though he broke all the rules, because while everyone else's forces were confined to base, his were rampantly violating every agreement and were terrorizing the population. And it just wasn't fair. And according to the agreement, the Lancaster House Agreement, any party that engaged in terrorism or intimidation would be banned from the elections, and their votes would be discounted. And so Mugabe was not legitimately elected at all, but the U.S. State Department supported it, and hence we've had 28 years of Marxist terrorism and this national suicide now as a result.
Well, what's going to happen there? I mean, it certainly is the country just going to go into total anarchy. My understanding, though, is that Chinese communists are there. Our good friends, the Chinese communists, who were incidentally were subsidizing, are moving in, taking over the farms, industries, and
yes.
Are they actually beginning to run the farms?
It looks like. It looks like Red China has now become the new colonial power in southern and central Africa, and they are moving in lock, stock, and barrel, and they're taking over. Chinese becoming a compulsory second language in the universities and schools in Zimbabwe.
Hold that thought. Well, that's really such a tragic end for what was once a wonderful, wonderful country. Well, let's get to some of the more encouraging things. Just to the north, of course, of Zimbabwe is Zambia. It used to be part of the same country, northern and southern Rhodesia, but now they separated it, and now we have Zambia. How's Zambia doing? My understanding is they're doing far better, and they really seem to have an element of prosperity because Christianity is growing, and the people are prosperous and much happier than in many areas of Africa.
Very much so, Dr. Stan. In fact, it's quite extraordinary. Zambia has started exporting food. Zambia has revalued its currency, and its currency has been strengthening against the dollar, something that you don't normally see in Africa at all. And we've been there regularly and thoroughly enjoyed going to Zambia. I met with the president of Zambia and the minister of foreign affairs last year, and we were told by the president of Zambia that the reason why Zambia's currency has been so strengthened and why they're now able to export food for the first time is because of all the white farmers that Robert Mugabe has chased out of Zimbabwe. They have welcomed several hundred of them to Zambia, and he says they are the ones producing all this bumper harvest, which has been such a boon to the economy of Zambia, provided so much more foreign exchange, employment, the shops are full, they're exporting, and he says this is the blessing that happens when we welcome our country, the farmers that Mugabe didn't want in his country. So he says Zimbabwe's woes have actually led to a great blessing for our country, but at what a tragic cost. The difference with Zambia is this. Zambia used to be communist, but now they're officially Christian. Zambia has officially renounced communism, even though that they were once the headquarters for communist terrorists, who, including Robert Mugabe's ZANU terrorists, when they were fighting against Rhodesia. But in 1991, the people rose up, ousted the socialist dictatorship of Kenneth Kaunda, and replaced the socialist humanist policy, which is the official name for it, socialist humanism, replaced it officially with Christianity. And Zambia has committed itself to being a Christian country, made amendments to the constitution stating this is a Christian nation, will be run according to God's laws. Abortion is now illegal, pornography is illegal, homosexuality is illegal. The schools begin with Bible reading, prayer, and hymn singing every day. And many incredible things. I just read in the news today that a hotel manager was arrested and prosecuted for possessing pornography in Zambia, and the Zambian government has made clear they will not tolerate this. And we know of many cases where the Zambian police have intervened in order to crush pornography, to crush abortion, to root out homosexuality, and they're seeking to enforce God's law to provide freedom. And the people in the country have just been so blessed that neighboring countries that are in trouble, Angola, Congo, Zimbabwe, Tanzania, Mozambique, many people are flooded into Zambia because they're finding the freedom that and the prosperity and the blessings that they can't get in their communist countries. So with Zambia seeking to enforce God's law and suddenly find the economy is wide open, no longer is there this black market and the parallel market for money. Everything is freely exchanged, unlike other countries where you can only exchange money in a government-controlled bank. But here you can change money anywhere. There's no currency regulations. And you can see Zambia is a country that now has freedom, whereas before the shops were empty, now they are overflowing.
So where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And that's, I think, certainly so true. If people would only understand that, as we turn against God here, why we lose our freedom. We'll be right back here. Well, our guest this evening is Peter Hammond. So at least Zambia is one shining light in the so-called dark continent. Well, what about the things over in Angola? Certainly there, of course, for many years, while the Chevron Oil Company kept the Marxist regime, totalitarian regime in power, and there were those who fought for freedom and Christianity, and there was Jonas Savimbi, and he was betrayed once again by the American government, and of course they tried to come up with a peace, and they signed a peace accord, and then the communists broke that. And so what's going on in Angola? Certainly, I think the one thing is the Chevron Oil Company, which incidentally had a tanker named the Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice, it was the name of the tanker, but of course it disappeared. It sailed out of the harbor one day there in Angola. Came back with a different name on it. Too embarrassing. But anyway, what's happening in Angola?
Well, at this moment, there is an uneasy peace. But, of course, we're talking about over a million dead in the wars there. What happened was, first of all, the communists were campaigning to take a hold of Portuguese West Africa. Remember, the Portuguese were in Angola for 500 years. And from 1960 to 1974, 85,000 people died in 15 years of war with the communist terrorists trying to take over Portuguese East Africa. And then you'll remember that we had a revolution in Portugal, and what preceded that was the Yom Kippur War. Israel was at war, invaded by Egypt and Syria. Russia was pouring in aid for the Syrians and the Egyptians, and America was sending aid through to Israel, weapons, during the Yom Kippur War in 1973. But Europe would not allow American planes to land for the weapons going to Israel. And so the only place they were landing en route was in the Azores, which is an island group in the Atlantic Ocean owned by Portugal. And when we saw that, there was a general feeling of saying, oh, watch for a revolution in Portugal next year. We were wrong. It happened next 6 months. There was a revolution, a communist revolution in Portugal in 1974, immediately after the Yom Kippur War, and Portugal immediately decided to hand all their Portuguese possessions and colonies, overseas provinces, over to Marxist revolutionary terrorists, with Cuban troops pouring in by the tens of thousands, Russian advisors pouring in, even while the Portuguese were meant to be in charge. And as the Portuguese left, the Cubans took over, and it was an absolutely nightmarish situation. 350,000 people died under the next 15 years of communism in Angola. Well, then, of course, South Africa got involved, and UNITA Freedom Fighters rose up and liberated over a third of the country. But then, 1990, after the Cubans were defeated and chased out by the South Africans, South Africa withdrew, and the United Nations came in 1990. And the next 3 years of peace, 650,000 people died. That's twice as many died in 3 years of peace under the UN as died in 30 years of war beforehand. The UN has this incredible ability to go into a bad situation and make it much, much, much worse. And so Angola went down into absolute anarchy. The second largest city in Angola, Huamba, was literally bombed into oblivion, flattened. And the UN did absolutely nothing to help the Christians in the south who were being bombed, but they put a ring of steel around it and wouldn't allow any bandages, medicines, Bibles to go in. Not the Red Cross, not the Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. No one was allowed in. We had to smuggle across a shoot-on-sight, ring of steel, international blockade in order to get medicines, antibiotics, antiseptics, quinine and so on in, quinine, to save lives in Angola, help the widows and orphans. And we lost one of our workers, Anthony Duncan, one of our missionaries, was killed during that time, reaching the UN blockade into Angola. And it's an absolute tragedy what's just done to Angola. The communists ruined it, and the United Nations allowed it to go even further down into the pit when we thought things couldn't get any worse. But by God's grace, the UNITA Freedom Fighters kept fighting, and they were bringing a stability. But then the leader of the Freedom Fighters, Jonas Vimby, was murdered in the most treacherous way. Russian Spetsnaz forces came in. They tracked by satellites, a satellite phone, and got into his headquarters, came in from the sky, and just wiped out this veteran freedom fighter who'd been one of the great hopes of Africa, Jonas Vimby, murdered about 5 years back. It was a real tragedy. Since then, there's been an uneasy peace in the country. The Marxists are still in control, but they're allowing a lot more freedoms than before. The churches are not being persecuted at the moment. But you can see the country's been wrecked, and what really bothers us is not only what the UN has done, but that Gulf Chevron has been funding this Marxist government in the oppression of the people for now 3 decades.
Yeah, first, why should we be surprised that Chevron Oil Company and the Rockefellers have been funding communism throughout the world for many years, and right here in the United States, if you haven't read the book Foundations of Power and Influence, who funded the American communist movement? Well, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, why the Carnegie Foundation. Doesn't make sense. Unless you understand there is an alliance between those who agree on total control over the lives and hearts of the people of the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and my guest is Peter Hammond. So, Peter, go ahead. Certainly, is there anything else we should say about Angola before we perhaps move over to Nigeria?
Certainly we should continue to pray for the Christians in Angola. Remember, they're Portuguese-speaking people. For 500 years, they were under the Portuguese, and now, for the last 30 years, they've been under the communists. Praise God, the Cuban army was defeated in battle and went back. But there's still a bunch of, although there's not the active persecution church that there was, we still have Marxist revolutionaries in charge, and that is a tragedy. So let's pray for them. And I must say, I have never been able to support Gulf, Chevron, or buy their gasoline since my work in Angola, because the people there have just suffered too much. We know that they were accessories. They were actually complicit in what was being done to them, funding the Marxist government of Angola and continually working behind the scenes against the freedom fighters and those who were seeking to liberate the country from communism. So I must say, Gulf Chevron, that's something that I prefer never to support.
And I would simply comment that Condoleezza Rice was on the board of that company, and that's why they named it a tanker after her until she became the National Security Advisor to the current regime under George Bush. Well, let's get to Nigeria, because Nigeria is certainly a major source of oil for the United States, and I understand that there's increasing turmoil there. Certainly there's a battle between the Muslims and between the Christians, and you know, of course, when the Muslims are in control, why, they simply are ruthless in their treatment of the Christians. When the Christians are in control, why, they try to be much more democratic. What's happening in Nigeria? Because this is certainly one of the largest countries in Africa, and one of the richest and most wealthy, and has the tremendous potential for all blacks.
Yes, indeed. Nigeria's got over 130 million people, so with a population that large, it makes it the largest nation in Africa. Just as Sudan's the largest country in terms of size of territory, Nigeria's the largest nation in terms of population. It's a huge nation. But it has a Muslim north and a Christian black south. And they've been at war between one another sporadically over the last several decades, basically since the British left, which was 47 years ago. Nigeria was a dictatorship under six successive brutal dictators, most of them Muslims, for years, until in 1998... A coup brought a Christian military leader to power. The persecution stopped, and there was a lot of hope for the future, although I haven't been there since the recent elections, which was just a week or two ago, but there's a lot of instability at the moment and concern that there could be an upsurge of persecution church. Let me state this.
Hold that right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Peter's telling us about Nigeria, where you have a Muslim north, a Christian south. There certainly has been recent elections, and who won those elections?
Dr. Stan, I'm not even sure on all the results. There were so much claims of corruption and such a lot of nonsense of what went on. Many of the people that are in Nigeria have expressed to me their real concern. I need to get back and work out what exactly has happened, but it seems confusion and chaos and accusations of corruption abound, and there's a tremendous concern that there could be an upsurge of persecution. So I'm not up to date on the situation as of the last week or two.
Well, my understanding is, of course, that there have been Muslim groups that have been attacking the oil facilities there and disrupting the oil pipelines and the drilling there. So, and there's actually, of course, a striking then at the economic well-being of the country. Is there any truth to that?
Oh, definitely. That is so. And Nigeria is the sixth largest oil-producing country in the world. America even imports oil from Nigeria, believe it or not. And yet the people in Nigeria don't have a single working oil refinery. They have to export their oil, have it refined offshore and brought back into the country, believe it or not. The people there stand in lines to get fuel. They've got to queue and stand lines for hours to get fuel. Can you believe it? In the sixth largest oil-producing country in the world. And the Muslims have been destabilizing them. Literally, tens of thousands of Christians have been killed. In fact, that's not even accurate. It's hundreds of thousands of Christians have been murdered by Muslim mobs in the last 10 years in Nigeria. And thousands of church buildings, literally thousands of church buildings, and I'm not exaggerating, that's statistically, it's facts, If you take, for example, during 9/11, September 11th, 2001, when the World Trade Center was attacked, do you know that more Christians were killed in one city of Jos, Nigeria, than Americans died in the World Trade Center attacks? It's true. 8,000 to 9,000 Christians were slaughtered in Nigeria at the same time as by Muslim mobs, same time as the Muslims attacked the World Trade Center. And the story is this. When the word came through that the World Trade Center had been attacked, something like 2:30 or so in the afternoon Nigeria time, the people came pouring out the mosques, and they were screaming Allah Akbar, and they were so delighted that the great Satan had been attacked. They rushed out, and the first person they killed was a black Christian pregnant woman, and they went and they destroyed 100 churches were burned down in Jos, that's a major Christian city in northern Nigeria, and then they destroyed hundreds of homes and businesses, killed thousands of Christians. And and this was being replicated in towns all across central and northern Nigeria, and it was as though they had pre-positioned weapons, and the government, army, and police stood and did nothing. And it's as though they knew that something big was going to happen that would distract the world's media for a long enough time for them to do whatever they wanted, and it wouldn't get reported. And I'm sure most people in America have never heard to this day how many Christians were slaughtered in Nigeria under the cover of the World Trade Center attacks on New York.
Well, if then it was really sort of miraculous, the situation wasn't there just when a truck containing rifles and ammunition overturned, and suddenly the Christians were able to get rifles and ammunition to defend themselves with.
Well, in fact, this was nothing other than a move of God in answer to prayer, because the Christians were fighting back with spades, baseball bats, and spears and bows and arrows, and they were fighting against well-armed Muslim mobs that had AK-47 assault rifles, RPG rocket launchers. They had everything. And this was a very uneven situation. Plainly, the Muslims were prepared and the Christians were disarmed, and the police and army were standing back and doing nothing. And then a huge 18-wheeler truck coming from Niger, a Muslim nation to the north, overturned just in for no apparent reason in the middle of a Christian suburb in Jos, and thousands of AK-47 assault rifles and huge quantities, hundreds of thousands of rounds of ammunition spilled onto the sidewalk. And the Christians just praised God, saw this as God's provision, took up the weapons and fought back, and they won the day, and they swept the Muslims out of the area. And only after they had restored order in the areas and chased these Muslim murderers out of their areas or ended them right there and then, only then did the police and army of Nigeria turn up and start to put up roadblocks. And they weren't seen when the Christians were being slaughtered, but they came to try and take weapons off them after the Christians had restored order. It makes one wonder who is behind this sort of thing, and do armies and police not exist to protect the citizens? It was just like in Rwanda, where the United Nations that had disarmed the Christians in Rwanda did nothing while the Christians were being slaughtered. Absolutely nothing. And yet they were the ones who disarmed them in the first place, and the peacekeepers stood in their barracks and did nothing while hundreds of thousands were slaughtered around them of people they had helped disarm and who they were responsible to care for. If people are depending on the United Nations or the police or army to protect them when the chips are down and when genocide hits, they should have another thing coming. The only thing that can stop genocide is armed citizens. And every genocide in the 20th century has been preceded by disarmament of the citizens. So I'm very nervous when governments start to disarm their citizens, as is happening in South Africa right now and as happened in Zimbabwe just before Mugabe started his farm invasions.
Yeah, I think it's vitally important to people here in the United States to understand that, when, of course, you have Dianne Feinstein and so many of our other politicians who, incidentally, carry guns themselves or have carried guns themselves, want to disarm the rest of it. It's not because they're concerned, because guns kill little tiny children, and that's how we're going, of course, to protect the children. It is because they are part of this this vicious system that intends one day to bring genocide to our nation. They understand. They're not stupid. They know, of course, that guns protect people. And in Washington, D.C., where they have some of the most strict gun laws in the entire nation, they also have one of the highest murder rates in the entire nation. And if the Congress, which is responsible for Washington, D.C., can't maintain law and order there, why should we think they could maintain law and order anywhere in the entire country? That's their responsibility. They've been tried and failed we're going to have to look after ourselves. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, that's absolutely true, Dr. Stan. You know, if a government doesn't trust its citizens with weapons, the citizens can't trust the government with power. And the fact is that if the government will not trust its own people with weapons, we cannot trust them with power. Criminals prefer unarmed victims, and tyrants prefer disarmed citizens, because then they can do what they want. And we can see, whether you're talking about Stalin and Lenin in Russia, or Mao Zedong in China, or Castro in Cuba, or Pol Pot in Cambodia, every mass murdering dictator has always started their genocide by disarming the citizens. So if a country in the West wants to disarm its citizens, I get extremely nervous. And yet I see in America, even after you have a massacre in a gun-free zone like the Virginia Tech, next thing you have leftists saying, oh, we must disarm people. But they forget that everyone was disarmed in that environment. And yet there's other cases where people were armed, where shootings were stopped. You know, there was a time when Israel was being attacked. The schools were attacked in 1970 and 71, and the response of the Israeli government was to arm the teachers, train the teachers, and to encourage parents to take turns standing guard duty at schools, and there hasn't been an attack on an Israeli school since then. And surely we should learn from the many cases where you don't get massacres taking place on shooting ranges or at firearm conventions. You don't have, where the people are armed, you have a polite society. But where the people are disarmed, well, you have a free fire zone for fanatics and ruthless mass murderers.
Amen to that. Or I certainly agree with you. Well, anyway, of course, there's sort of then an uneasy peace in Nigeria.
There is, but I think we really got to watch just the Christians there are suffering, and there's a lot of Muslim persecution of Christians in the North, and for some reason it doesn't get much media coverage in America. And this is what bothers us. Why is it that if Muslims are suffering somewhere in the world, like Darfur, there will be a lot of media coverage? But when Christians are being genocided, like in southern Sudan or the Nuba Mountains or in northern Nigeria, somehow it's not news. Is this a case of ABC, anything but Christianity, and the news media in the U.S.?
Of course it is. I mean, there is an active conspiracy against Christianity. I mean, that should be so obvious, you know, that this is Satan's attack on God's people.
And yet Christianity is what made America great, free, and prosperous. You would think that they would want more Christianity to get more freedom and prosperity, and yet it seems that these people who claim to be for freedom, yet they themselves are the slaves of depravity.
Amen to that. Well, we've got a real problem here in America, that's for sure. Well, anyway, how about Southwest Africa? Is that fairly stable now?
It is quite quiet, but the disturbing thing is that the first president of Namibia, Salmon Joma, he has come out in support of Robert Mugabe's farm invasions in Zimbabwe, his racist, lawless policies. And this has made many farmers in Namibia very concerned that something like that could be planned for them. And we're concerned that if the world community, especially the U.S. government, does not act firmly against the farm invasions, the racism, the lawlessness in Zimbabwe, then it can be replicated, can be encouraged elsewhere. But if there is a firm reaction that punishes the Zimbabwe government adequately to make sure that they don't get away with this, then you will find others will not follow that example. So we are deeply concerned that the lawlessness that has not only been allowed but has been rewarded. Remember, Robert Mugabe continues to be an honored guest of the United Nations, being a plenary speaker, getting more standing ovations, speaking at even the Commission of Sustainable Development. Do you know that right now Zimbabwe's been voted on the United Nations Commission for Sustainable Development, and they're now the chair people? The chair of the Sustainable Development Commission of the United Nations is now run by Zimbabwe. I mean, while they've destroyed their farms, bankrupt the country with state-sponsored terrorism, the United Nations is beyond a joke. It's an enemy of everything, of freedom and faith, and until the U.S. government makes it a major policy to crush this kind of tyranny, all they're doing is encouraging it to spread to neighboring countries in Africa, like Namibia.
Well, I fear that the American government, at least in the foreseeable future, short of God's intervention, will not come to the defense of Rhodesia or South Africa or any other place, of course, where Christianity is under attack. But boy, will it be concerned, you know, if Marxism or communism or of course the Muslim faith is under attack. So, I mean, we have people in Washington D.C. who give hypocrisy a bad name. What about Darfur? Is there really, as we have heard, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed there, have died of poverty and starvation. What's really going on in Darfur?
Dr. Stan, I'm concerned that a lot of the emphasis on Darfur is a misdirection. It's a misfocus because Darfur is in fact a very underpopulated area. It's got a population just in the hundreds of thousands, and the incidents of atrocities there, which, although they may be real, are not to be compared with the incredible genocide that's been perpetrated against Christians in the Nuba Mountains in central Sudan and against the Christians of southern Sudan. And yet, although for 50 years Christians in southern Sudan were subjected to horrific genocide and the worst kind of atrocities, slave raids, bombing, our mission base has been bombed 10 times in southern Sudan. Churches and schools, I've been bombed while preaching in churches in Sudan, even on Sunday mornings, aerial bombardment, artillery bombardment by the government of Sudan, and yet that didn't make the news over here. While Christians were not being helped and they were being deliberately starved by scorched earth policies, crucifixions, burning of crops, poisoning of wells, this didn't make the news. Suddenly, we are meant to believe that the New York Times and the Washington Post are really concerned about, and CNN are concerned about the people in Darfur. I don't believe it, because Darfur really is a sideshow. The real atrocities, the major humanitarian crisis, is in the Christian South and in the Nuba Mountains. And for some reason, Darfur keeps getting the attention, but Darfur is a totally Muslim province. It's black Muslims against Arab Muslims. It's just the bandits have fallen out amongst one another. Darfur has always been a slave trading state. The Darfur people have been the ones who've actually perpetrated the worst atrocities against the Christians in the Nuba Mountains and Bahr el-Ghazal, and have led most of the slave raids. They have been the slave raiders and traders for the Muslim nation of Sudan. And now that they've fallen out with their buddies in the National Islamic Front government that they've served so faithfully for so many decades, now that they are reaping some of what they've sowed in Darfur, we suddenly have massive concern. Dr. Stan, I might be being a bit cynical here, but I think that what's going on here is the United Nations every few years needs to find some humanitarian crisis, or invent one, or just focus on it and blow it out of proportion to justify their worthless existence and to get a further infusion of funds into their parasitical organization that they can leech off. And so every few years they will either create or they will focus on some humanitarian crisis, as long as it's not a real one where Christians are suffering. And that's what the Darfur is right now. It's the flavor of the month. It's a fad. But there's far more serious things happening against Christians in Nigeria and in southern Sudan, which we should be concerned about. We shouldn't be misdirected by the media hysteria and church focus on Darfur at this time.
All right. Well, now I understand that some exciting things have been happening in the Congo as far as the spread of the gospel.
It has. You know, conflict in the Congo has killed 4 million people in the last 8 years. For centuries, the Congo suffered at the hands of Muslim slave raiders, and yet it's been torn apart by a succession of civil wars, military coups, and a plundering of its resources by the socialist dictators, a whole succession of socialist dictators. But now, Congo, although there's no political freedom in the country as such, the Congo is having a mass people movement to Christ on the ground. Hundreds of thousands, and I think without exaggeration, I can even dare say millions of people have come to Christ in the last several years. It's an extraordinary people movement, and I've been there, ministered in what used to be known as the Shaba province or the Katanga province, which, remember, the United Nations invaded and bombed in submission. If you've read The Fearful Master and seen some of the reports or films on the Katanga story, that's the same place we're talking about, where the biggest people movement's happening. The people in Katanga are coming to Christ. And while the government is still ostensibly a very Marxist and socialist, praise God that on the ground I see a lot of hope for the future, because people are turning to Christ. And we've even had mayors, generals, judges from Katanga attending our Biblical Worldview seminars. We had the biggest attendance at one of our Biblical Worldview seminars earlier on last year. We had 1,000 people, including top government and church leaders, local government, that is, attending the Biblical Worldview Seminar to learn how to run their society on biblical principles. I'd say there's a lot of hope for the Congo. Not that we're suggesting there's freedom in the country yet, but there is a real hunger for Christ amongst the people on the ground.
Well, of course, if there was a real revival in the country, the people were to turn to Christianity, there's a good chance that they could then once again move towards a free society. Because where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. And remember that, as we look and see what's happening in Africa. A tragic situation. Oh, Peter, let's get your telephone number and your website out.
If anyone wants our material, we've got our website, www.frontline.org.za. That's frontline.org.za. You can also phone 1-888-918-4100. 1-888-918-4100. Ask for a free pack of Frontline materials. And our website, frontline.org.ca. Lots of reports and updates on Africa, lots of pictures and resources. So if you want to know more on Africa, phone 1-888-918-4100 or look at frontline.org.ca.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you didn't get all of that, why, of course, we hope that you'll give us a call. We'll be glad to get you the information, telephone number, website, because Barbara and I feel this is a very worthwhile effort, and we've been supporting Frontline for some time. We just think that they're doing what we can't. We wish we could be over there with you, Peter, but I'm getting a little old for that, and my wife's got to stay around to look after me, and besides that, I feel that we've been given a voice, and we want to utilize that as long as we can to honor God here. So anyway, we want our listeners also to know that we think it's a well worthwhile Sunday ministry, and they're doing a tremendous job. They have missionaries in almost all parts of Africa, helping the Africans to set up their own teaching and establish the churches. And a lot of good things are happening in Africa that we haven't had a chance to talk about. Why don't we just briefly mention Mozambique, could we?
Well, yes. In fact, that's one of our success stories. That was our first mission field. I entered the killing fields in Mozambique back in 1982 when our country was at war with Mozambique. South Africa and Mozambique were really at war and hostility. But God led me as a young South African soldier to, when I left the army, to get a motorbike and smuggle Bibles and take in the Jesus film in Portuguese into Mozambique. And we found a church horribly persecuted. Not even 4% of the people of Mozambique were Christians back in 1982. The Bibles were banned, churches were closed, nobody under 18 allowed in churches, only a few state-controlled churches allowed. 8,000 churches had been closed or confiscated. The Marxists had put 300,000 Christians in concentration camps. It was a bad situation. We had to smuggle in Bibles, but by God's grace, today, the war is over, the government's abandoned and rejected Marxism, there's a free market, there's multi-party elections, there's they've returned churches that they confiscated to the church, have returned firearms they confiscated back to citizens, and today hundreds of missionaries are in the country legally, and there's a real hunger for Christ. Christian schools being planted. So Mozambique's one of our success stories. It was the first country I ministered in throughout the 80s. That was my primary one. I was a prisoner in Mozambique. I wrote the book In the Killing Fields of Mozambique, and yet today it's a country we can freely work in. And praise God, Marxism was defeated in a country where they claimed they would make the first truly Marxist-Leninist atheist country in Africa, and in fact they failed right there. And so we can keep praying for Mozambique. It's still a mission field, but at least it's a mission field where we can freely work.
Yeah, because it wasn't freed primarily politically, it was freed by the people returning to God, and then the politics began to
change. Indeed. The politicians were forced by the very courageous resistance movement that was fighting against them, and we had the privilege of helping them.
Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest has been Peter Hammond. We've been talking about Mozambique and really, of course, how the influence of Christianity had a profound impact it had, as to the point where the politicians were forced to change their policies, and now Mozambique is increasingly prosperous, increasingly free, an amazing successful story. Going back over 25 years of dedication and dedicated missionaries willing to risk their lives to bring the gospel and spread it in that region of the world. Well, Peter, thank you so very much for being with us. God love you, and we'll look forward to having you on our other program there next week.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stan. It's always a blessing. May God bless all of your listeners and America.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our programs with Peter Hammond. Of course, we do talk during the breaks. We've had him on several of our programs. If you'd like to get the tapes, why, of course, they're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. One of his associates, Charles Van Vake, has also been our guest. And so if you would like to get his tapes as well, as we cover the Africa, and of course, many times they say the same things, and many times they say things some from a different point of view. Fascinating information you're not going to get elsewhere about God's work in Africa. And, of course, if you're interested in helping Peter and you didn't get the telephone numbers, you can call us and we'll get the information for you. Then, of course, we do hope many of you will want to get some of the material we have. We have a four-tape set called The Other Holocaust. And, of course, it's these two of the tapes go into the background of what happened in Rwanda and the terrible tragedy that took place there. And then, of course, we have information, you know, certainly on so many aspects of what's going on in the world today. And certainly we have information on the Armenian Holocaust. We have certainly four tape sets on almost every subject you'd want. Go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, look at the four tape sets we have, and we hope you want to get some of them. One of the ones we think is very apropos today is called The Secret Behind the Secret. It deals with, of course, what's going on with something that is being spread across America with Oprah Winfrey and Larry King's blessing, called The Secret. Well, we tell you the secret behind the secret, and that is that millions of Americans are opening themselves up to demonic possession by trying to apply this mind-altering technique that opens people's minds to demonic possession. So that's the four-tape set, or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. And then, of course, you'll want us to get our My DVD, The Forbidden Secret. It comes with an excellent syllabus with documentation on the background. And, of course, we're basically talking in many ways about the same secret, about these people who've turned to the worship of Lucifer. There are many people in the world today who believe that Lucifer is a good God, that you and I worship the wrong God. And, of course, then you need to get my book and or the DVD or VHS entitled The Brotherhood of Darkness, Constance Cumby's DVD or VHS, The Emergence, going into the background of the New Age movement. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set of Constance Cumby. We have her book, Brotherhood of Darkness. A great new video at the present time. It's called The Atlantis Connection. And it's a talk given by Chris Pinto, who produced the Secret Mysteries set, Secret Mysteries, of America's Beginning, and The Riddles in Stone, professionally done DVDs. We carry both of those. We recommend them to you, but we also recommend the one-hour presentation Chris puts forward as he talks about this idea that America was to be the new Atlantis, the long-term planning to bring about the new world order, the new world religion, with the new world leader. So all of these available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. So until Monday, when we'll be with you, may the Lord be with you.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.